Welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly news roundup podcast, where we take a critical look at some topical developments from the past few days with a leadership and management theme. I'm business and finance journalist Matt Packer, and in this podcast we'll be exploring stories from the week of the 21st of May, including Govia Thames Link's timetables rewrite spawns commuting chaos, big brand retail chiefs continue to grapple with the challenge of doing business online, bosses signal their gloom over protectionist policies, and CEO tops a list of jobs most suited to psychopaths. Joining me to discuss these developments is the Institute's Head of Research, Policy and Standards, Kate Cooper. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Matt.
Okay, in our first story, swathes of cancellations followed Govia Thames Link Railway's move to implement fully rewritten timetables across four of the UK's busiest rail franchises on Sunday the 20th of May, with the problem spilling over into the subsequent working week. In what it described as, quote, the biggest change to rail timetables in a generation, GTR rolled out all new schedules for its Great Northern, Southern, Thames Link and Gatwick Express arms with the aim of achieving a capacity boost. Instead, the service is all but ground to a halt, sparking social media fury among commuters. Does this indicate that it's better to phase in sweeping changes like this rather than action them all at once?
I think anyone who's ever done any timetabling knows the complexity of it. The knock-on effect of a small change in one place just goes on and on. And often I think we arrive at a solution of let's leave things as we are. Mm-hmm. So this radical change to timetabling took in itself quite a lot of courage. I think we've also seen with other big systems changes, there will be teething problems. With something as complicated as the rail network, I don't see how phased introduction could really have worked.
Yeah, I mean, these are extremely complicated and busy services as well.
Yes, I mean, one of the lines I'm very familiar with. What I found really interesting, though, was how statistics can be used and interpreted for whatever purpose. Govia Thames Link is saying, overall, this is better for everybody, more seats and more services. And the commuters are making claims that their services have been absolutely decimated. They both can't be right, can they? But it's like anything, we'll get a very strong reaction. When things settle down, people get used to the new, because, of course, essentially, most of us resist anything new and different, which is so ironic when
yes.
You think it's the first thing that anyone will say when they go to a job interview is, I'm really good with change, I can lead change, I can implement change, I'm adaptable and flexible. But when it actually happens to us in a sort of personal and domestic level, it's very unsettling and upsetting.
So you'd say that we're in a kind of a period of polarisation with these changes at the moment?
Yeah, exactly that. There's a sort of the please keep it the same brigade saying this is devastating, and then no, we must change it for the greater good saying look at the benefits. And I don't think we'll be able to really evaluate it till after a couple of weeks and then everybody's learnt the new way of doing things.
Yeah, great. Right, next up we have two stories in one which show the extent to which retail leaders are still grappling with the digital challenge. On one hand, Marks & Spencer boss Steve Rowe has announced that the chain will close 100 stores up to 2022 as part of a radical transformation plan, telling the BBC that he expects a third of the firm's business to be online within the next 5 years. By contrast, Tesco is pulling the plug on its non-foods retail site Tesco Direct. Having been unable to bring it into profit, it will now sell non-food lines through its main Tesco.com site. My question here is, considering retail is evidently in such a state of flux, what kind of leadership skills will equip firms to withstand such an uncertain environment?
I think really linking to the previous piece about the railway timetables, it's about being adaptable. And I think we're seeing most retailers thought, oh yes, let's do online, without really thinking that it was a very different business model requiring a very different way of operating and different people to operate it.
Yes.
This is a bit of a shakedown, isn't it, about finding out where they are good and where they should focus and being courageous enough to call back and say, you know, this isn't really for us. This isn't where our skills are.
I suppose it also ties into the fact that even though there are an awful lot of firms involved in retail, the business model is not the same from firm to firm. Each brand would have a different business model and that suitability for going online is going to be different.
Yes, and it's also about what your customers want. And I know we have the perception out there that older customers like service and younger customers are much happier to shop online in that more anonymous way. What we don't know is that when people get older, then will they start? The young people of today who like the anonymous online experience might change into somebody who wants something rather more. There will always be room, space for great customer service because it makes people feel good.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, in our third story, a KPMG poll of 150 UK CEOs and more than 1,000 of their overseas counterparts has uncovered significant opposition to protectionist economic policies. Indeed, 64% of UK leaders and 55% of the international respondents are pessimistic about the potential effects of territorialism on long-term growth, with KPMG UK Chairman Bill Michael saying, quote, "It must be a priority to increase collaboration between businesses, government and academia, drive social mobility and unlock the talent British businesses need." Now, what do you think firms should do to offset the effects of these policies?
I think this is another case where somebody's argument for protectionism is great because that's what the business needs to survive or grow. And for somebody else, it's a nightmare and it's going to contract their business. Mm. I think increased globalization, we've got more mobile workforces, more opportunities to sell online with actually never having to occupy a physical space. Protectionism must have had its day, and I can understand why they're gloomy, but really it's about being able to adapt to the circumstances in which you find yourself. How can you get close enough to your customers to be able to deliver the service that they need and to focus on that rather than on essentially things that are beyond your control?
So it's more about opening yourself up to the detail rather than getting too distracted by the big picture and too daunted by it.
Well, and too pessimistic and defeated by it. You know, Brexit will happen on the whole, whether or not any individual, any business wants it to. So how can we respond to things in a way that is successful for us? And also, we might have something that's even more alarming, looming than Brexit. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it's that ability to respond that's much more important than that ability to predict what it might be.
Okay, great. And finally, I've been looking forward to this one. CEO has topped an Oxford University researcher's list of jobs with the greatest appeal to psychopaths. While promoting his book, The Wisdom of Psychopaths, Dr. Kevin Dutton noted that the role of CEO is a natural draw for those with psychopathic tendencies because it provides a golden opportunity to control and manipulate people. Incidentally, few are immune from Dutton's chart, which puts journalists in second place. So thanks for that. Would you say there's any truth to this, Kate? And I mean about CEOs, not journalists.
Yes, I'll withhold my comments on that one. People often talk about the loneliness of the CEO, but what we also talk about is the romance of the heroic leader. Mm-hmm. And I think they're both myths. I was at an event today listening to Professor Turnbull James from Cranfield talking about narcissism.
Right,
and somebody
yes.
in the audience did ask that classic question, well, you know, if you don't have leadership qualities, what can you do? So this idea that somehow we're born with these qualities, obviously, then when you get to a senior position and you have been successful, of course, you start feeling you're great and you're right. So I'm not surprised that those things that go with that narcissism, you know, the energy, the single mindedness, the drive and determination, it's not really a surprise that they end up as CEOs. I think the interesting question for them to ask themselves is at what cost?
Yes, I suppose it's all about the dangers of believing your own publicity, isn't it?
Yes, it's taking full credit for success that we all know is really only achieved through collective effort. No one person can make and sell, manage the IT. You know, this is a lot of people involved in delivering a successful business.
Yeah. OK, so the message is CEOs, not as scary as this chap says.
Well, the message to CEO is sort of well done you, but how about thinking a bit more empathetically about the people around you? That could hold true for journalists too, Matt.
Yes, indeed. OK, that concludes this week's episode. Listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section of the Institute's website, which can be found at www.institutelm.com. That's www.institutelm.com. Thank you very much indeed for your insights, Kate. I look forward to exploring a new set of stories with you next week.
Great. Thanks, Matt.